Hello, here we are again. This is Music Heads, presented by 89.3 The Current from Minnesota Public Radio. Thanks for dropping by. This is a weekly chat where a couple of colleagues and I gather around and have a little fun discussing some of the new music we're playing on the station and to find out if it's working for us. I'm the host of the show, Bill DeVille. It's my pleasure to welcome today's guests. Our music director's in the house. Hi, Melanie.
Hey, Bill. How's it going?
It's Melanie Walker. Nice to have you back.
I know. It's good to be back.
Yeah, and our evening host, Mark Weed, is here as well. Welcome back to Music Heads, Mark.
Thanks. It's been so long.
It has been a while.
Seven long days. Thanks for letting me come back.
Yeah, I can't wait to dive in. How about you?
Me too.
All right. Jolie Holland is a singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist originally from Texas. She was a co-founder of the Be Good Tanyas, which she eventually left to pursue her solo career. The Living and the Dead is the title of her latest. Her fourth album finds her with a more modern Americana sound. Tom Waits is a big fan of Jolie Holland. It's not hard to figure out why. Both are excellent songwriters and both love to write about the downtrodden and the seedier side of life. Both also have a very unique vocal style. All their own. The Living and the Dead boasts guests like M. Ward, drummer Jim White, and Tom's occasional sideman Mark Ribot guests on several tracks and plays a nifty national steel guitar on this song called Fox in the Hole. Love that swampy and eerie vibe and that national steel guitar from Mark Ribot and those haunting atmospherics. It's music from Jolie Holland's Living in the Dead album. Melanie, is this working for you?
You know, Bill, I've always been a fan of Jolie. There's something about that drunken, like, drawl, that slur that she's got. I mean, it's so unique. But it's not in a way as well, because there's a lot of women out there that have this kind of Southern influence that they inject into their music. But there's something about Jolie that sets her apart, and I think it is because she's dark. But it's not depressing. It's more like being introspective and being melancholy. And I like some of this album. I've always been more of a fan of her minimalist approach to stuff. I like it when she's more bluesy. Yeah. I like it when she is more dark and when she's more melancholy. So there's a few tracks on there that sound great. They're a big, fuller sound. It's just not my Jolie, to be honest with you. It's like Mexico City, Your Big Hands, which are great tracks, but I think that's not my favorite side of Jolie. I think I like that vintage side of Jolie a lot more than maybe more of like a Lucinda sound in Jolie. So some people like it when people switch things up, and you know, I think I encourage all, you know, musicians when they're doing different things to try them out. But I think for Jolie, she's really hit the nail on the head when it comes to that kind of melancholy country noir kind of swampy sound, like you said. That's a great analogy for that.
Mark, is this album working for you?
Yeah, I don't know about swampy. I like Jolie because she's full of contrasts to me. Like Melanie was saying, she's got a dark side to her, but I always remember when she came in the studios early in our days, and she actually had a pony, a little statuette of a pony standing on the guitar riser.
That's kind of whimsical, huh?
Exactly, and she said, no, I have to have it there, and the guitar player joked about it. But if you look at the back of this album, she's holding a pony. A toy pony. Now, see how much that makes you laugh? Because you listen to this album, you think, oh my God, this woman is so dark and mysterious. So I like the contrast that she does. And I like the contrast in themes, too. You spot, you know, the traditional country sound. And the first couple of times I listened to this album, a couple of the tracks just kind of floated over me as if they were traditional country songs that I didn't want to get very deep into. And it was only when I put the headphones on and actually listened to her vocals and her lyrics that there's so much depth in pretty much every one of these songs. And
yeah, I was going to think that that you probably would like the lyrics on this album. She's a very good lyricist. Very dark and very interesting. And I in particular liked Corrida Poor Buddy, the second track on the album. It talks about a ghost-faced junkie on the streets of New Orleans, and he died. I mean, it's a really, really dark subject matter, but really a pretty song and really well-crafted lyrically, I thought.
Hey, yeah, that bad religion in his blood, the kind that brings you down and can never lift you up. He was a beautiful young man on the streets of Austin. He was a ghost-faced junkie on the streets of New Orleans.
Reading the story about how she put the album together, apparently she's still really kind of shy, really nervous, takes a lot of takes, stops in the middle of takes because she's hypercritical of herself. And I think this is an album where she's finding her feet. She's surrounded by, in my mind, geniuses.
Oh,
Mark
yes.
Rebo, I've admired his guitar playing for years. And M. Ward, everything he touches almost turns to gold. And Jim White as well. And the production on it is awesome.
Oh,
and it seems like she's growing into herself. And another great backstory. Did you read the backstory about Daniel Johnson?
I did not.
This guy is kind of a, is there an appropriate word, like a savant musician, where he's been in and out of mental hospitals, and he's kind of a legend down in Austin, Texas.
Story all his own. He cleaned tables at the McDonald's in Austin, Texas
right.
for a long time. And
he still lives with his mom and dad. They just made a documentary movie, and that,
that was
she
genius,
watched that.
By the way.
It's a genius movie, and it's inspired Jolie. She says, this album wouldn't have happened without me discovering Daniel, and I guess seeing him struggle with his performance anxiety. And she's probably not quite there, but she does have those issues. So it's good to see such a strong, muscular album. I liked it when you mentioned how rocking she is. And she even can whistle. I've always admired a good whistler.
She's an excellent whistler. She's right up there with Andrew Bird. Did you catch that on,
Love Henry.
Yeah, track number 4, You Painted Yourself In.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then the traditional one right at the end, Love Henry, she does whistling all the way through that sounds like a saw at times, and obviously they could have affected it with gadgets, but I'm down to, like, she's got the kind of soul where she probably had to nail that take live in the studio, even the whistling.
Listening to Music Heads presented by 89.3 The Current from Minnesota Public Radio. The Swedish group Caesar's fifth album is titled Strawberry Weed. You might recall their 1998 release under the moniker 12 Caesars. They're also sometimes known as Caesar's Palace. Strawberry Weed is the new one. It's produced by Ebbet Lundberg of Soundtrack of Our Lives and features the band's familiar mix of 60s garage rock guitars and 70s power pop melodies. Caesar struck it big with their smash hit Jerk It Out with their retro Farfisa organ-fueled song that was a big part of the iPod commercials a few years back. A few songs in the album feature that cheesy Farfisa, but they also don't abuse it, and that's a good thing. They do use the organ to huge success on this one called Crystal.
Oh yeah!
I tell you what, it's impossible not to turn that to 11 when you hear that organ part. It sounds like it was being played underwater, I think. New album from Caesars is Strawberry Weed. Mark, is it working for you?
About half the time it's working for me. It's a
good thing you didn't hear the import. Did you hear about that?
Yes.
Two CDs, 24 songs?
See, you stole my line about half the time, and it's only half the album it used to be. So there you go. I only like a quarter of it. Yeah, I don't know why. I can, you know, if it was Astroworks, who are the American label, saying, please, guys, you got to cut this down. I can understand it because for me, these guys are a singles band.
Yes, they are.
I love Crystal. I love No Tomorrow, which is the other pushed track. And there's another one, which happens to be track 7, New Breed, which is creepy and catchy all at the same time, which I think would work. We've been playing a couple of those, and they sound awesome on the radio, but I gotta say, why an album?
Well, they gotta put all those songs somewhere, don't they?
Well, see, that's my point. I haven't been making a big deal about this, but 2008 was the year that the band would come to an end. And I think this is a good example, because one of these guys is in Teddy Bears, right?
Yes, he is.
So he's made a lot of money off the Teddy Bear success, too. And I'm thinking these guys want to make... a lot of the reviews are saying, like, these songs just need to be on iPod commercials, you know, or a insurance commercial or whatever. Time to get the ride started, sorry. If there was a different system for these guys to make money and perform music like that, I'm sure they would. We just haven't figured it out yet. The business forces us to have bands. You know, like,
I don't know.
Well,
just the idea of them playing
that.
Live is a pretty good idea for me.
They don't like to play live, though. They're not even going to tour over here, right?
No, and things are changing in the music industry right now. If you look at hip-hop, there's some major labels that are signing brand new hip-hop artists for just one song, and they'll work that one song and they tour with that one song, and depending on how that song does, they decide whether or not they're going to do another song or another album. So I'm kind of in favor of bands still making an album. And even though this Caesars release was not overall altogether the strongest, it's still fun for me, I think, to listen to an album like Caesar's Strawberry Weed and be able to like listen to a song and be like, okay, this is fun, this is good, and then wow, I love that track. That's the track, that's the hook. I like that process still. I mean, if you had hits on every single track on the album, I think it would almost bore me.
We don't need an album. That's what I'm saying. The album died last year, Melanie. Now it's time for the band to die. And I think that these guys are one of those that they're stuck in the old, you know, kind of rock regime that we force them to be in. And I don't see any point. In fact, track 1, I've got a theory that lyrically these guys, I think, are strong. You know, for a kind of a garage band, their production skills are awesome. They're great in the studio. I love soundtrack stuff as well. But number 1 is called Fool's Parade, and the lyrics suggest he's commenting on the business that they're in, making music, and he says he wants to go higher. And I think that's kind of the frustration I see. Yes, they can do the garage rock thing, but they can do other stuff too, and they don't want to be forced to be in a band that only does one thing. And
to me, they don't do one thing. They have that mid-60s stuff, and then they have that later, you know, 70s Big Star, Hollies, Raspberries kind of, you know, power pop thing that they do too. And yeah, they don't really didn't put the Farfisa in every single song.
No, that was awesome.
And you can't do the Swim to every one of their songs, you know? You can do it to a good chunk of them, but I don't know. I think this record's pretty good. You know, and to think that the 12th song on the CD, the last one, might even be the highlight. There's a really great psychedelic freakout on the song New Year's Day that I thought was fantastic.
The second half, it's like funny how they paced it too, because they paced it like non-traditionally, because it is it's a good length now, but the second half is by far the strongest part of the album.
Yeah, I agree. And one other thing we haven't talked about is Sweden in general. Think about all the music. Is Sweden the new Brooklyn?
Can we go there?
Licky Lee, Peter Bjorn and John, Jens Lekman, Cardigan, Soundtrack of Our Lives, Shout Out Louds, well, Jose Gonzalez.
They're all friends with each other. I mean, it's a small country, so they're all friends with each other. It's like one person gains success, they help each other out.
And their government actually over the years has supported it by actually funding them to go on tour, which
sort of
is
like
pretty
Canada.
Impressive. Yeah, exactly.
Support is nice to have that, I suppose.
That's right.
You're listening to Music Heads, presented by 89.3 The Current from Minnesota Public Radio. Multi-talented piano man and singer Ben Folds is best known for his work with his group Ben Folds 5. They were a breath of fresh air when they emerged at the height of the loud alternative rock era. They had a number of hits on the airwaves in the 90s. Most of them are upbeat piano-driven songs, except for the ballad Brick, which really took their music to the masses. Eventually, Ben Folds dropped the five and produced an album for William Shatner, which wasn't half bad, by the way, and contributed songs for the animated film Over the Hedge and toured with Ben Queller and Ben Lee as the Bens. Ben Folds' new album is titled Way Too Normal. On much of the album, he sounds as though he's in the midst of a midlife crisis, but here he is doing what he does best. It's the song called You Don't Know Me and features Regina Spektor.
Existential moment where we saw the couple in the coma and it was weird.
Ben Folds' new album is called Way Too Normal. Melanie, is this working for you?
No.
Ouch.
I'm sorry. I have never been a fan of Ben Folds. I hope to God he never hears this because, I mean, the guy can sing. He can play the piano. I mean, he's obviously a great musician, but there is just something about this kind of uber geek power pop thing that I'm just not a fan of, man. I've never been a fan of Ben Folds 5, and I've never been a fan of his solo work. It's a personal thing. And him being so grumpy on this album and basically
apparently he just went through a divorce.
Lighten up, man. Yeah, lots of people go through a divorce.
Yeah. We're on the edge of a depression.
But this is not the first time that we've had like a big album of grumpy Ben, right? I mean, he's done this before. It's
Agreed.
Part of his persona, and I find it to be truly obnoxious. There you go.
Fair enough. Mark, is this album working for you?
Man.
And I've never been a fan of Billy Joel, and he gets that comparison all the time, so.
Well, how about that first song where he gives a little nod to Elton John?
A little
Hiroshima.
Nod, come on.
Is not to Benny and the Jets just a little bit?
Absolutely.
To be compared to Elton John is no.
Oh, be very careful, Melanie.
I like Elton John.
So is it working for you, Mark?
I love Elton John, and as soon as he started on the Benny and the Jets thing, I was like, you've got to be very careful where you step, Ben. And unfortunately, he has a history with me just as he has with Melanie. So that was like the step off the front of the stage that he describes in that first song. Because to me, that was him going right where I expected him to go. And he fell flat on his face. And I wasn't even going to help him get up.
Start of the show, Hiroshima. And the people were shouting my name. Came down and the spotlight followed me out. I waved hello to the crowd as it busted ass off the front of the stage.
Track two, actually, that we've been playing quite a lot, Dr. Yang, lyrically doesn't really work for me, but the power of it is that something that's new on this album. I have to say he's almost, again, as rocky as he's ever been.
Hey, Dr. Yin, chain-smoking Chinese centenarian, deck my back with pins, connect the wires and plug me in.
And I like the kind of beef that he's put into some of his rock, but it was really hard to get through. Just like Melanie, it's like he has this irony that was so the zeitgeist like 10 or 15 years ago that he nailed it perfectly. I didn't get it. I didn't want it. So I stayed away like Melanie, but he nailed it and he's still trying to do it. And unfortunately, it just sounds too tired now. And I've got to say, the only way I can accept this album is as the music for a Broadway musical that has to be made, because he has to have that idea behind him. You know, Duncan Sheik has just had big hit on Broadway. This is where Ben should be. He should be writing the music.
He should be a Broadway star.
I'm serious.
I think
this thing
too
would work.
Grumpy for that, man.
No, this thing would work if you follow the storyline through. Like Bill said, he's just gone through a divorce, and there is a storyline to this about being out on the road. The songs are very specific about that, about something breaking in the middle. And I have to come to his defense. for one song on the album, which is Köln. Most people say Cologne, but the Germans say Köln, and he actually refers to saying it wrong in the song. It's track 6, and to me, that's as fine as he's ever got. It's a ballad, it's got depth, it's a perfect love song.
By the way, I'm with you on Cologne, but that song's buried amidst the rubble, if you're asking me.
It's hard
me.
To get to that one.
And the way this guy panders F-words on this album and a bunch of other naughty words, I'm going to say the S-word. This record sucks.
Whoa!
This record sucks, and here's another S-word. It's very sophomoric, and all the words and all the everything seems kind of calculated and forced, and I'm not digging this at all.
You know those people who are always trying to one-up you? Ben feels like he's always trying to one-up me, and it's obnoxious, and I just feel like I don't have time for it anymore, and I'll be honest, I couldn't even listen to the whole album.
Yeah,
it was
brutal. It was
brutal. Really hard to get through it all.
Life is too short for this album.
Yep.
Well, that was about the harshest review I think we've ever had in Music Heads. It's now time for the portion of the show where we invite you to get involved. We ask you to tell us your honest stories about music and its place in your life. We ask a different question every week. My guests and I will start it off and then invite you to join in with your story online. Today's question, is there an artist you used to not care for, but you changed your mind about them when one of their songs won you over? Melanie.
I'm going to get crucified for this. But I know that there's a lot of people out there that feel the same way that I do. So I'm okay with it. I've made peace with it with myself. But I gotta say, I've never been a fan of Justin Timberlake. Never liked any of his music. But Sexy Back? That song just kicks major booty. I love that song.
I'm not afraid to say that on Music Heads.
Yeah, I can say it over the air.
I'm guilty
of
Justin Timberlake. I think he's a talented guy.
Oh, yeah, he is. His music is not my style, you know? Yeah. I mean, when he duets with Madonna, I tune out, man, but that video and that song, I was just like, who is this?
Not bad. I like it too. Mark.
Well, and this might be a cop-out, but I think it works beautifully on this episode because I gotta say, Ben Folds works for me because I had exactly, Melanie put it so well, yeah, I had the exact same reaction to him. Never understood why he was so well-liked. And when we started the station, we started something very soon after we started the station called The Greatest Love Songs of All Time. Or a Valentine's Day special, anyway. And it was down to me to put the playlist together. And lo and behold, the first year and every year since then, his song, The Luckiest, has been one of the biggest requests for a love song. And I gotta say, I cringed the first year. I was just like, I gotta play Ben Folds in this thing. And it works for me. It's obviously got a lot of power. I've read and seen stories about the power of this song for a lot of people. And as I say, it's been on the top of the list for the last 4 years now since we've been doing it. So that was the song that won me over to Ben. And I got to say, hearing your...
Apparently he was in love then. Huh?
Right. Or not. I don't know. Because that's the great thing about The Luckiest. It's kind of not straight ahead. And I think it probably affected my review of this album because it actually made me at least sit down and listen to it all the way through a couple of times because he caught me with that one song Colne in the middle there, which is very similar to Luckiest in the way that it's haunting and it's not quite, you're not quite sure what he's saying, and it works as a ballad.
Is there an artist you used to not care for but changed your mind about them when one of the songs won you over? Yes, for me it was Outkast and their song Hey Yeah. And it's not that I didn't care for them. They were just kind of a top 40 band that I just wouldn't have followed. So, but that song to me is amazing. It makes you want to dance and makes you want to shake it like a Polaroid picture.
That's
what more
right.
can you say? Is there an artist you used to not care for, but you changed your mind about them when one of their songs won you over? Tell us your story online. Go to thecurrent.org, look for Music Heads, then follow the links to join the discussion online. In this episode, we discussed Caesar's new album, Strawberry Weed, Ben Folds' Way Too Normal effort, and Jilly Holland's Living and the Dead. I want to thank Melanie Walker. Thanks, Melanie.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And Mark Wheat, thank you.
Thanks, Bill. That was awesome.
It's a wrap. It's been Music Heads. Thanks for checking it out. Subscribe to the podcast of the show by clicking on Music Heads when you go to thecurrent.org. The program is produced by Steve Seal. Michael Wells is the podcast production coordinator, and Julia Schrinkler manages the show's online discussion, which we want you to be a part of. Go to thecurrent.org, look for Music Heads, then follow the links to join the discussion. I'm Bill DeVille from 89.3 The Current. Music Heads, is it working for you?